Now, in the casting directions of his play, The Trouble with Harry, playwright Lachlan Philpott instructs a theatre company to cast the roles of Harry Crawford and Eugenia Fellini with an actor, and I quote, early 40s, to be played by anybody but a biological male. Now, the story of Harry Crawford and Eugenia Fellini is a complex one, as you may have guessed by that direction, and it's being brought to the stage at the moment for the Melbourne Festival. Lachlan's with us now to talk about the play and his very exciting new role as Australia's Fulbright Professional Playwriting Scholar. Lachlan, welcome to Weekend Arts.
Thank you for having me, Melanie.
Now, Harry Crawford slash Eugenia Fellini's story seems to pop into the public's consciousness every few years, probably most recently with Mark Tedeschi's book. Can you describe to the listener who may not have heard of him who this person was?
Yeah, I think it does. It certainly has captured the public's imagination for a long time. And I think, you know, it's because of the number of mysteries that surround Fellini or Crawford. So Eugenia Fellini was biologically a woman and lived for a lot of her life as Harry Crawford. And it was in a time, obviously, before we had transgender people or we had the kind of concepts of gender dysphoria. So even though at that time there were a lot of women who were actually living as men for different reasons, but I think what captured the public's imagination was not so much even the fact that Fellini or Crawford was convicted of murdering her second wife, Annie Birkett, but the fact that that they had gotten away with a marriage for over 7 years, and it seemed that Birkett didn't know that Crawford was in fact a woman. So that's the popular story, and I think for me what I was really interested in looking at when I was actually writing the play is whether that's possible, and I guess for me kind of challenging some of the dominant ways that we look at our histories and asking the audience to look at the other ways that we could actually consider that story as well.
So what on the record did you have to work with when putting together this play?
Yeah, it's fascinating because I began writing the play well before Tedeschi's book came out. So that sort of came out after I'd written a few drafts of the play. So I was working with the help of a number of other theatre makers. It was commissioned originally by Focus Theatre. We supported the Australia Council, and it's sort of been developed with a lot of support from other theatre companies as well. But we were looking at court transcripts. We were also looking at a few other accounts that have been written, because it seems to me that there's been a lot of attempts to capture this story, either, you know, in film or as a play or in other kind of contexts, you know, as part of the museum exhibition. So, yeah, I mean, it's a really interesting story, and I think that a lot of people have trouble actually getting answers because there aren't any. And so I guess that the approach that I decided to take was, rather than try and actually pin down the answers, was to go with a different sort of process, which is to actually acknowledge that we can't pin down the answers and leave the audience in a position of actually not knowing. I think audiences in theatre get so used to having to have the answers that I wanted to actually play around with making them sit in a position where they didn't know, and to actually for them to understand that it could be a number of different things.
That's really what great theatre does, though, doesn't it? It encourages us to keep asking questions.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, long after the curtain. Oh, we don't really have curtains these days, do we?
No, and this production for Melbourne Festival certainly doesn't, because it's being produced by MKA, New Writing Theatre in Melbourne, and it's in Northcote Town Hall, which is really atmospheric and really challenging as well, because, you know, it's obviously a play with a lot of words and so on, and it's in a really big hall where it's very difficult to hear. So they've come up with some great solutions, but that might be something that the audience who go get to find out.
Now, how was your interest piqued in this story?
I think the exhibition that was held, which had photographs that had been found or unearthed, with a whole series of photographs of criminals from a particular era in Sydney. And I guess, you know, a lot of my plays are written about Sydney because that's where I come from. And I think that, you know, I love Sydney in many ways, but I also find that it's a very kind of contradictory city, and I kind of like to try and get underneath the skin. And it seems to me that actually there's not an awful lot of plays that are being written about Sydney's history, or about things that that might kind of give us answers to the way that our society or the way that we kind of relate to each other today. So I think I was really interested in writing that, and also just the kind of, there's something about the gaze from those photographs that were on display, and that were also in a book called City of Shadows. And you look at that picture of Fellini, and it's hard to forget the look And I think that, you know, it's a gaze that is about pain. It's a gaze that's being about misunderstood. And it's a gaze, I think, that also shows the hardship of living at that time for anybody. And she had a tough life, and I think all the other people around her had a really tough life. I was also really interested too, because I think we've heard a lot about Fellini, but for me, the people who were in Fellini's life are often the ones who are forgotten. And I was really keen with writing the play to actually make sure that Burkitt, for example, who was murdered, whether or not Burkitt was actually murdered by Fellini, because there's some doubt to that. But whoever murdered Burkitt, the fact is that this is a woman who's been murdered way before she would have died naturally.
And Burkitt is her wife.
Yeah, Burkitt's the wife, yeah, Annie Burkitt. And then also Fellini had a daughter. So at some point she was obviously impregnated and had a child but couldn't live with Josephine, her daughter. And so Josephine was brought up by another woman. And again, I find that the idea of living a life and not actually having a parent, a mother or father, and having to deal with knowing that your mother was actually living a life of deception would have been quite difficult as well.
Isn't it interesting the language that is around this? And I think of Mark Tedeschi's book is called Eugenia, and in our discussion now we're referring to her as Eugenia Fellini. Mm. If she... Or if he, this is what I mean, if this person lived today and was living as Harry Crawford, there is no way we would be referring to her or to him. This is what I mean. It's so interesting. Did you explore the language that surrounded what Harry Crawford, Eugenia Fellini was going through at the time?
Yeah, and what we also did to begin with was we... originally interviewed quite a lot of people in Sydney, and I also went to New Zealand because that's where Fellini originally came from, and spoke to a number of people who were transgender or identify as transgender, mm-hmm. To get a kind of insight into their experience and to get an insight into the things you can say and the things that you can't say, mm. when you cause offence, because obviously you have to know that to be able to write a play, even though then the times are very different.
Yeah.
And it was funny because, I mean, originally the play had two acts. So the first act was this story that's still in the play, and the second act was a more contemporary story about a teenager who was experiencing the sense of being trapped in the wrong body or, the wrong gender. But in the end, I think we all realised that the second act wasn't necessary, because a lot of the issues that come up in this story are still things that we struggle with today. And I think it's difficult, I mean, because we live in a world where we tend to, be splitting things into binaries. And so when you have the other, it becomes very problematic, and people are want to try and label it I think there's always a sense of people not necessarily wanting to acknowledge that it's difficult or it's complex. And, even when we have readings of the play or media comes out, I think that understandably there are people in the transgender community who get very upset about some of the things that you've pointed out. And I guess that's why, I think when you're creating a piece of art, you have to also say this is an interpretation. It may not be, mm-hmm. which is, where some of the issues where I think Mark Tedeschi's book came into, where there are a lot of questions about some of the ethics of his representation of that story and assumptions that he'd made in fictionalising stuff that was coming from court transcripts. And I think that also meant for me that I wanted to be very sure not to go down that path again. But, it goes back to your original question, I think, about why it can be played by anybody else except a biological man.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, too, that this particular character as well, in that time, I think there's in the note that Alison Campbell's written in the published version of this play, she talks about how there just wasn't the language. Like, Harry Crawford wouldn't have said, "I'm a trans man," for example. That just didn't exist, that kind of language.
No, but I think too that what I also find really sad is that at the time, when you look at some of the tabloid press, that was really sensationalist. There were things being said about Crawford or about Fellini that are things that still get said today.
Really?
Yeah, which I think is really, really alarming when you're talking about things like the shock term, the man woman, or a whole lot of other things in relation to terms around perversion. And I guess for me too, the other thing that's really interesting about this particular case, and even the exhibition that they had at Historic Houses Trust, the centrepiece of the exhibition or of this story is the dildo, that was apparently used by Crawford on Burkitt.
And this was part of the court case, was it?
Yeah, it was. I think it was part of the court case, but it was also part of the exhibition. And I think whenever it's whenever we speak about this, or whenever a lot of people speak about it, the question comes down to what did they do in the bedroom, and how on earth did this woman fool her wife? And I think that's where it becomes really interesting. So for me, I wanted to be able to use the play to actually go into the bedroom and to look at how kind of ridiculous that question is, but also to kind of unveil that fascination. Like, if that's what we all want to know, then let's actually go there and talk about that and dispel some of the kind of myths around the acts of sex, let's say. Yeah.
You're on Weekend Arts, and my guest is Lachlan Philpott. Lachlan is the playwright behind a new play, a relatively new play, yeah. Called The Trouble with Harry, which is on at the Melbourne Festival very, very soon. Lachlan is also the very new Fulbright Professional Playwriting Scholar. Lachlan, that's a pretty fancy title.
It is, yeah. It's very exciting. And I'm lucky, I think, to be the first or the inaugural.
Yeah, and how does it work? What is it? Is it like the normal Fulbright?
So it is like a normal Fulbright, and I think it's exciting that certainly Fulbright has selected artists before, but there hasn't been playwrights. And I think in a society like Australian society, where playwrights are maybe they don't have the same status as they might in other Western countries. So I think it's really exciting that that Fulbright have recognised that, and also that Inscription and Cal and the Australia Council have all come to sponsor this. And hopefully that'll mean that every year there'll be a new playwriting Fulbright playwrights scholar. But for me, it means I'm going to go to San Francisco mainly, and that I'll be living there for about 4 or 5 months and writing a play with MFA students from the American Conservatory Theatre, which is really exciting. And I love working with young artists to actually come up with an idea and write a play. That's the kind of way that I really like to work. And I'm also going to Kansas. To Manhattan, Kansas, which will be exciting. And a group of university students are working there on a play of mine called Bus Town, and they're going to be doing an adaptation of that because it's very Australian. It's kind of... It has Mad Max kind of undertone, so I'll be working with them to do an adaptation of that, which will be fun.
I want to go back for a moment, if we could, to the American Conservatory Theatre in San Francisco. They are more well-known as an actors' theatre kind of thing. The acting company is very, very famous. But I wonder, is this a partnership you've set up to go in and write a play for them, or is this something Fulbright has done? Why the ACT?
Yeah, I've had a bit of a pass with San Francisco. In a few ways, but I went over to San Francisco on an Australia Council residency a year or two ago and established some strong ties there, and also feel like, given that San Francisco are very similar in a lot of ways and we share, similar history, but they're both very beautiful cities, they're both possibly party cities over intellectual cities. There's a whole lot of different things that I think are really interesting, but I guess I'm really keen to set up stronger links between the arts community in San Francisco and the arts community in Sydney. So that's the reason. ACT is one of the leading theatres in the US, but also their artistic director is a writer. So that was one of the reasons why. And I think because I have such strong links in San Francisco as well, I was keen to go back there and work. It's an interesting art city, and it's a city, I think, where the theatre is very ideas-driven, more so than perhaps Sydney is. So that was another reason.
And the aim of the scholarship is to write a play that could be performed in America, but also here in Australia. So have you even started to think about that?
No, I've been thinking a lot about it in kind of way of wondering what to write about. But I think also what the deal is that I'm going to work with the students to come up with the material and then go from there, which is a nice challenge as well. It's sometimes nice to actually hand over and see what other people are thinking about as well. I think if you're a playwright that always has to come up with your own idea, then sometimes you can get a bit stale. So I'm really looking forward to getting to know that group, and I'm also excited because I've spoken to them and that they have a really diverse range of students. I mean, diverse from lots of different cultural backgrounds as well.
Great.
So it's an opportunity, I think, to work and to get to know a very different side of America.
Well, I'd like to finish by asking you, and we touched on this very, very lightly before, about the role of the playwright in Australia. Now, last year you had quite a famous stoush with a production of your play Alienation at Perth Theatre Company, telling the audience that what was on stage didn't quite reflect your intentions as a playwright. So I'd like to ask you then what you think the role of a playwright is, and when does the role of a playwright within a production end? That's a big question, actually, and we've only got a couple of minutes to answer it. What a shame.
Look, I mean, I think the theatre is the theatre and the arts, I think, are really important in any culture, and I think sometimes in Australia we don't, actually value the arts enough. I think a lot of the rhetoric at the moment kind of leaves the arts out, and it leaves out the what the arts can bring to a culture and bring to an individual too, which is, you know, the kind of the thing, the imagination and the imaginary stuff that keeps us alive and makes our days brighter and connects us to other people. And I think playwrights are really important because they don't just tell stories, but they bring people together in the theatre. And it's one of the only places that people actually come together and turn off their phones and turn off everything else and actually experience something together in real time. And I think those sort of connections are things that we crave a lot, but actually can't get anymore in a lot of other different things. And it's, you know, watching theatre isn't like watching television. It's probably closer to going to church, except let's face it, despite what people think, a lot of Australians don't go to church anymore. I think that that's why playwrights are also, really important, because they drive the ideas and they come up with the stories that we hopefully will pass down to the next generation and the experiences that we will remember. You know, I think there's nothing quite like going and seeing a brand new play and and having that sort of collective memory of what that moment in our history was like.
It's wonderful. Thank you so much, Lachlan, and all the best with your Fulbright. Perhaps you can give us a few little correspondent
that'd be fantastic.
Chats while you're over there. Right. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Nan.
Playwright Lachlan Philpott, Fulbright Professional Playwriting Scholarship winner and the writer of The Trouble with Harry, which is part of the Melbourne Festival from the 17th of October until the 9th of October at the Northcote Town Hall. You're on Weekend Arts.